Hello, young professionals. We're here today with Chris Dick, a distinguished engineer and DSP chief architect at Xilinx. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Chris, tell us a little about yourself, your background, where you studied, and how you ended up here.
Yeah, so I'm Australian, so I grew up in Australia, and I first studied at La Trobe, I think it was probably the late 70s, in the electronic engineering department, right? And one of the appealing things at that point was at La Trobe, there was a very hands-on type of electronic engineering graduate class that you could do that might sound odd. But at the time, it was hard to get access to computers for being able, you know, as part of your undergraduate, right? But at La Trobe, so I guess I ended up doing a joint degree, right? Because I was enrolled in engineering, but also for the undergraduate piece, at least, also the computer science department. And so I really valued being able to have access to decent computers that you could use, like in your first year at in your graduate class. And then later on, I went on to work at La Trobe for a number of years. I think technically it was 13 years that I worked there, and also graduated with a PhD from La Trobe in the mid 90s. I think. Yeah.
So how did you end up in Silicon Valley at Xilinx? I mean, what was the journey?
The journey was that I actually very much enjoyed my academic life at La Trobe and teaching. I valued that very much, but I had a very strong passion for FPGAs and the combination of FPGAs for signal processing. So I came to a point in my life where it was like, well, if I want to really be able to be in the centerpiece of where that sort of work happens, that I thought I should move to Silicon Valley to be able to, you know, work right at the heartland of those technologies.
Absolutely. So now you work in Xilinx in the Silicon Valley, a place where many young engineers aspire to work. We would love you to describe your career journey to where you are today. How did that all happen?
So I guess at the front end of it, it all starts off as sort of individual contributor and working on all sorts of cool projects. Like if you like developing code and projects that you see get used in people's products, right? And you say your joy and reward and satisfaction from knowing that, you know, your engineering craft has made a difference to someone's product, hopefully even broader, to humanity or broader things that are beneficial to society. But seeing them used was a real buzz. And then as it went on, and maybe this is a somewhat common path, it sort of becomes not only is your, you know, technological capabilities or technical abilities important, but it really becomes more prominent that the skills that become more prominent are soft skills and judgment and business acumen. So it's not like, you know, just sitting isolated in a cube writing software, you're given a project and off you go. I think in particular in Silicon Valley, there's a lot of weight put on certain engineers' judgment beyond just their technical boundaries, right? So, you know, in a sense, even though there's folks that are specifically tasked with business development and marketing, I think there's sort of large opportunities to take on a broader role, which really appealed to me, being able to have also the technical piece, but I was super interested in how does the business work and write and what can your technical insights bring to the development of a business and understanding how to build roadmaps, how to figure out what do people want, you know, what a company is looking for. And at the end of the day, a lot of it doesn't come down to just, you know, I'll read the latest, you know, IEEE transactions back to front, but it comes down to, you know, establishing connections with people that work at the, you know, larger companies, and they tell you what they want. And you can derive from that whether you have a role or an answer to what they're looking for. And that was, I guess, at the time, sort of an interesting facet to the work. So it still is an interesting and evolving facet to the work.
How long have you been at Xilinx, and what roles have you held during this time?
Yeah, so I've been at Xilinx for 18 years. So it was actually our 18th year anniversary on January 23. So January 23 just gone, I guess 3 days before Australia Day, right? January 26, yeah. So, and it's always been in signal processing, right? So it's the common theme is always signal processing. Very much dominated by communication signal processing. So we might think about signal processing in the sense of radio cellular, wireless networks, wireline networks, right? Anything from delivering that cable television, cable television media to your home, the signal processing sits behind that. There's been some flavor of signal processing, a little bit on one facet of satellite comms on the communications side of it, and it's the role of span from I call it R&D, right? Writing code, building stuff, building stuff meaning either writing RTL or writing C or MATLAB or algorithm development, that sort of thing, through to leading and managing a group of engineers. To a bit of a combination role of leading and managing a group of engineers and participating in sort of corporate roadmap development and representing your company at either industrial events or at other companies that you're trying to secure business from. And that is actually, I think, an interesting role for people that are in engineering or have a technical outlook, but also have an additional aspiration to do more than maybe just the engineering part. I mean, the engineering part's great, and if that's what you like to do, then you should do that. But there's also great opportunities for folks that like to have sort of a multidisciplinary outlook and interest in their work that extend or expand from the engineering piece, like actually, algorithm, MATLAB, C code development, through to working with customers and interacting with customers and understanding their problems and really getting the key problems that give you something tough and challenging to work on.
Absolutely. Now, in short, what are some of the most exciting projects that you've had the opportunity to work on and involved with?
Mm-hmm. So the some of the exciting ones and which still hark back to the early 2000s and remain relevant and exciting today is very much in the wireless cellular arena. So we do a lot of work in cellular wireless systems, and there's a lot of signal processing that sits behind those wireless cellular systems, and that is an exciting area for me personally. I like the signal processing that goes on there. I like the concept of communication networks and next generation communication networks and enabling all the different parts of society from communications and letting humans communicate and solving all sorts of different problems that might span anything from business to health to entertainment.
So, touching on the topic of communications, 5G is a very hot topic at the moment. Where are we at with 5G at the moment, and where do you see it going in the next few years?
Mm. So on 5G, if you're in the wireless cellular community at all, then you have to have a story around 5G. So we believe that, and I believe, that FPGAs and the evolution of FPGAs have a strong role in 5G because you've got such a diverse set of use cases that people that paint the vision, the IMT 2020 vision of what 5G cellular networks will be, which is supporting anything from Internet of Things through to self-driving cars, enhanced mobile broadband, extremely ultra-efficient energy communication. You sort of now have this rich set of technical requirements that require an equally rich set of technical capability to be able to sit behind it to make that vision a reality. So right now, we're sort of in the interesting phase where you can make 5G anything that you want, basically, because there is no 5G standard. So in a way, the door is open, the imagination can run wild in terms of what's plausible, possible, valuable for 5G technology. That I guess at the end of the day, we'll march to the cadence of the ITU and 3GPP community as the 5G spec evolves from its very nascent stage that it is now, through to the various study groups that solve for some of the core technical challenges of 5G, through into the 2020 era, where we'll see the first standard inked on paper.
With so many devices coming online, you mentioned energy efficiency as being one of the biggest challenges in this space. How do we make communications more efficient with 5G?
Yeah, so that's a good question because it's a one on everyone's lips. So soft and green, you have flexible networks to be able to flexible systems to be able to support the device, the diverse set of use cases, and energy efficiency, being able to use a tiny amount of energy to efficiently deliver bits over the air. And so the technologies that are underpinning that span anywhere from the RF shelf, so fundamental modifications and evolutions of what the RF chain looks like, so the RF technology, the approach to the way RF shelves are designed, to the approach of how power amplifiers that drive the antennas that sit in any communication system, through to a re-examination of how could modulation waveforms be constructed that are more respectful of energy efficiency moving out in the 5G, because spectrum is sort of the key crunch. Your spectrum availability is one of the key bottlenecks of communication systems these days, with everything below 6 gigahertz sort of occupied pretty much across planet Earth. So RF capability, the fundamental nature of the waveform that will be one participating part on 5G, because 4G won't go away. 4G still has a very strong life in front of it. In fact, it won't even hit the peak of its rollout until 2020, and there'll be a co-evolution of 4G with 5G. Through to even smarter capabilities that are not necessarily in the node, but in the network. So for maybe able to deliver energy efficiency through making use of data center, for being able to do baseband virtualization and be able to amortize your cost of investment in something like a base station, to not only, you know, compute someone's payroll, but for being able to actually play a central role in the communication network. And there's CapEx and OpEx efficiencies to be had in that realm as well. So Cloud RAN, if you will.
Fascinating. So much development in that space. On a slightly different topic, you know, Silicon Valley is home to a lot of the world's leading technology organizations. How much interaction do you have with these other organizations in the sector?
So we have a lot. So for me personally, every day it's probably, you know, 2 to 4 customer type interactions with you know, medium to large customers. And when we first moved here, that was one of the big appeals. I guess I didn't realize it at the time that would be one of the opportunities, but I might regret saying this, but when I first moved there, it's like, well, they don't have to pay. I don't know why they pay me to come here, you know, to work here. It's so enjoyable having access to a diverse set of people that work at these big companies, that you're trying to either work with them or participate in some cool ideas that they're trying to bring to market. So that is one of the interesting things about Silicon Valley, that it is sort of reasonably open in terms of, you know, access to people, and being able to have the opportunity to engage with people at large companies and understand their problems and understand how certain people are looking to build out a new vision, a new world in you know, a diverse set of technical capabilities.
Maybe all the talent at your doorstep.
Mm.
So in your opinion, what are some of the soft skills required for young professionals to succeed in Silicon Valley?
So soft skills. So the sort of the technical part, but the soft skill part is maybe an underappreciated part, right? So the soft skill part probably, or it does play a bigger role in what your career path will be, probably more than your technical prowess. Because at the end of the day, you're working with other people, right? If you're hard to work with, if you're a difficult character to work with, it almost doesn't matter how smart you are. If no one wants to work with you, that's a problem, because it's gone are the days of an individual person making on their by their own contributions, substantial differences to anything, right? It's usually teams, you know, modest size to medium to large size teams that you need to work with. So the soft skills of being able to work with people, and be able, I also put in the soft skills, being able to communicate with people, not only verbally, but also written. Although I must admit, in this day and age, it's not like people necessarily look forward to, oh, I want to read a 100-page communique on what is going to be, you know, what should we focus on 5G, but being able to succinctly summarize your ideas, present them to a group, and either get the buy-in of your team for an idea that you're passionate about, or your management to secure funding for a project that you think is key to evolving and developing the business of your company, is sort of crucial, right? So that communication ability, public speaking almost, right? If you're in a company, maybe you're not public speaking out on the streets of Silicon Valley, but you'll be talking to executives in your company that might not have as their specialty the technical area you work in, but you want to be able to explain complicated concepts in a straightforward way that explain, you know, why are you talking about it? Why are they here listening to you? And, you know, what's the value to the company?
So a toned down elevator pitch.
Yeah, well, you have to know your audience. Absolutely. Yeah, so you have to know your audience, read your audience, understand what their level is, because you don't want to overshoot or undershoot, because both are a problem. So the soft skills are super critical.
And, you know, through our conversation, you've been mentioning, you know, one of the things that attracted you and you found quite interesting is that you had the ability to understand the business and you had the ability to take your technical skills and marry them up with other elements of the organization. So if you're hiring someone tomorrow or next week, what sort of graduate capability would you be looking for alongside those technical skills?
Mm-hmm.
How important is, you know, understanding a business and being able to understand the vision of the organization?
Yeah, so there's probably a couple of answers to that, right? Because you don't want everyone to be like, oh, the engineer, and also playing the role of roadmap development and, you know, representing the company. That's not plausible, right? So it's a bit of a what if. So certainly if we look at the end of the spectrum of new college graduates coming in, usually what we'll look for, or what I'll look for in particular, is one, do they have some facet of their education where they're really quite skilled at, right? And could be C coding, or it could be that they're an expert in communication theory, or that they're an expert in the development of certain algorithms for coding theory or something. But the other part that we look for is a little bit of diversity, or that I look for, right? Can you sort of read in just how the person manages themselves in the interview that they're going to be evolving into someone that's somewhat of a rounded figure that is not just going to be working in one little pocket of technology or happy working in one little pocket of technology, but has intuitive mind or intuitive sort of behavior that you could see them fitting into multiple roles in your organization as it evolves, right? Because gone are the days of sort of fixed format organizations with jobs that, you know, last for 20 years, you know, the one type of job that lasts for 20 years. So you're looking at people that show some sort of flair with adaptability, you know, people that are, you know, I'll say smart, but people that carry themselves well, that as best as you could see, have good judgment of.
So transferring their skills, I mean, the industry is evolving at such a rapid rate.
Mm.
Certain jobs don't currently exist, but the new graduates will be rolling into those particular roles.
Right. So you want someone that's flexible and someone that is just, again, as best you can figure out from one or several interviews, going to be a good learner and a self-motivated learner, someone that will take the initiative to be able to evolve and develop themselves is a highly valuable asset to a company.
And my last question is, you know, you're an alumni of La Trobe University's Engineering in Melbourne, Australia. What advice can you offer to students who are aspiring for a successful career in technology, engineering, and computer science?
So one, you want to be good at your technology, but that's sort of a given, right? For that's, if you're going to be working technology, I think you do that. So the other part, I think, is awareness of the environment and the planet around you as to what are the challenges that either people are facing, companies are facing, governments are facing, and sort of being able to grow a broad outlook that may extend beyond just core technical things. And I think that helps you be able to figure out how you can make a difference, help find your niche where you'll be happy working in a thing that you like to do, right? Because I guess, you know, what I tell my kids is that, you know, at the end of the day, you need to be working in something that you're going to be happy in for the rest of your life. Maybe that job will evolve. You know, you'll be in technology, it's not going to be exactly the same slot in technology for the whole of your working career, but you better find something that you're passionate about and that you want to do 24/7. And I think figuring that out can be hard. And so being able to go beyond just the, you know, the books and just the rote learning and reading newspapers, right, and figuring out what's going, you know, being plugged into community and plugged into the world's challenges. Even the challenge, you mentioned 5G before. So the challenge of 5G is not just technological, right? It's based on what's happening across the planet in terms of different governments and countries trying to figure out what's their role in 5G, having appreciation for the social side, the business side, above and beyond the raw technical side of the area you work in, I think is a very valuable skill.
Absolutely. Such powerful words of advice there, young professionals. Chris Dick, thank you very much for the time that you've devoted to this interview. For the rest of you young professionals, stay tuned for some more exciting interviews. Greetings from myself and Michael Goff here from Xilinx headquarters in San Jose, California.